at hockeyprimetime.com. My name is Tom Radio. And I'm the host of the show, and it's nice to be back with you. Happy New Year, right? That's right. Yeah, it was December 30th last time we spoke. We haven't spoken since last year. A happy New Year. All the best to you and yours. I hope you're having a good holiday season. Is that the holiday season over? Do we officially know what when does it begin? When does it end? I threw out my Christmas tree. They came by with a wood chipper to take care of my Christmas tree. So I guess maybe the holiday season's over. Either way, I hope it was a good one for you. And Laura Saba is back with us after being away for the last couple of weeks and missing out on the lovely Montreal weather that we've had lately. How you doing, Laura?
I'm good. Thank you, Connor. It's been a while. I've missed being on the show. I have not missed this weather.
No. And it's only going to get worse. Bad news, right? January is bad. February is usually worse. And March is underratedly awful in Montreal as well. And this year, we haven't even had the reprieve that the Canadians provide by playing a decent hockey at least every once in a while, although we were treated to a pretty good game the other night against the Tampa Bay Lightning. But yeah, Montrealers, I think what's happened here in the city, and this was after last week's show. I actually went downtown to meet a friend, and it was on a Saturday night, and granted, minus 30 with the wind chill. I'm talking Celsius, not Fahrenheit. And I could not believe we went to a Ye Olde Orchard pub downtown on Mountain Street and hadn't been there for a while, but I've been there on game nights before. The Canadians were on the road in Florida taking on the Panthers, and it was an awful, awful game. But I was going with a buddy of mine, and we were talking on the way there. He was saying, you know, what do you think it's going to be like? It's going to be hard to get a seat, a place to sit down and hang out. I was like, I don't know. I don't know what to expect. And we walked in, and the place was dead. Like, there was nobody there. And this place used to be on game nights. They have the projector screen down. They had a giveaway for road games. They would give away tickets to the next home game to one of the people at the pub. It was a whole big thing. And it really was a sort of, I think, an indication of what's going on with the Canadians, is that not only are people, they've gone from being angry, and that's a very, very dangerous thing for an organization to be dealing with, is the apathy of a fan base. All of a sudden, the Canadians are not a hot ticket. And in fact, I think most people would rather not go to see a Canadians game live. And it looks like they'd rather not go out to the pub and watch the game either. I guess they want to feel the shame and the comfort of their own homes of watching them. Or maybe they just don't want to watch them at all. Which I've said before, there's been times that I've felt like if it wasn't my job to watch these games, I don't know if I would be watching these games. And it breaks your heart even more if you're a hockey fan who's just a fan of the game. And they're, I know that's most of the people listening. They're fans of hockey. They're not just fans of one team in particular. But in Montreal, it seems like maybe even more than in other places, they're fans of the Canadians, but they're not fans of hockey. This is not a market where a lot of people watch out of market games. And I love watching out of market games. I mean, it's the only thing I do enjoy watching.
Right.
And it's the hockey is good. I've said this in this space before, and I'll say it again. The hockey this year in general is really good. It's super entertaining, super fun to watch. The caliber is really, really high. And then you watch a Canadiens game and you wouldn't know it.
Right.
For the most part. However, on Thursday night, we got a little taste of what this team actually seems to be capable of when everything comes together. And I know they don't have Shea Weber, but listen, every team deals with injuries. Not an excuse I'm really willing to listen to for how badly they've played and how boring their games have been. Just a chore to watch. But this is what the Canadians were supposed to be. This is what, and I'm not angry that they made me look bad in my prediction. The Canadians aren't making the playoffs. It's not going to happen. It's over. And even if they get an Andrew Hammond-style run, it's still, in all likelihood, not going to happen. It's basically a 99% chance that they will not make the playoffs this year. And there is that slim little 1% chance, but still. But it's almost more frustrating because of how good that game was on Thursday night, because you get a taste of, oh, look at this. They can come up with a really solid effort. Max Pacioretty had a good quote after the game saying, you know, that was the most fun he's had since he can remember the season for the Canadians. And for those of you who didn't watch the game, I'm sure there are many. Thursday night at the Bell Center in Montreal, the Tampa Bay Lightning, the top team in the NHL, comes to town. A little bit of a rivalry. It's a division game, and they face each other in the playoffs twice in the last I'm going to say four or five years. So you've got, there should be anyway, the semblance of a rivalry there. And it felt like it. It felt like the game of the year, and it was for the from the Canadian standpoint. They all are. Tampa, I don't think they really – they had a 24-point lead over Montreal. 24-point lead over Montreal going into that game. And the Canadians played them great. I mean, they went toe-to-toe. It wasn't just that Carey Price bailed them out. Price and Vasilevsky went toe-to-toe. Great goaltending matchup and just a highly entertaining hockey game. 1-1 the whole way through. Max Pacioretty and the best scorer in hockey, and Nikita Kucherov, scored the goals within 40 seconds or so of one another. And then the goalies went at it right up until the shootout. And if you haven't seen it already, Carey Price made, well, you can say this, the best save of the year so far. But, you know, it is only the, I don't even know what it is, the sixth?
It's the sixth of January.
Thank you, Laura. So it's the 6th of January, and that was the save of the year in overtime on Andre Palat, right after stopping Tyler Johnson with a circus stop right before that. Just an amazing, sort of incredible bit of acrobatics, sort of rolling over on his back. But you can watch Price's eyes in the situation. Price has his eyes on the puck the entire time, even when he's rolling over backwards on his back, almost Dominic Hasek style, and getting the leg out there in an unorthodox, but kind of like a, it was like a breakdancing move, almost just an amazing, amazing save. And Price very quietly has raised his save percentage now to 910 after being in the 890 range and quite a lot worse than that in the early stages of this season. 910, how high can he get it? Does he have enough time to get it up to 920 by the end of the season? Either way, we know this, if Carey Price does not do what he did in that game, and that is stop everything except one shot he's still looking for from Nikita Kucherov, the Canadians are going to lose the game because this team cannot score goals. They are as bad as the worst teams in the NHL. And Price is keeping them in games. Night in, night out, Carey Price keeps them in games, although the San Jose game might have been an exception, but they just can't score. They can't score on the power play. They can't score at even strength. They can't score shorthanded. They just cannot score goals, and it's the same old story with this team. And I really do get the sense that the fan base has now fully and is ready to turn the lights out on Marc Bergevin as the general manager of the team. Many people are talking about Julien Brisebois to go back to the Tampa Bay Lightning. He was in town the other day, assistant general manager, assistant to Steve Yzerman, and maybe that is the guy who's the next GM of the team, but we don't know. This is the thing too, right? The grass is always greener on the other side of the fence. And the simple fact is we don't know who Julien Brisebois is. Now, I floated this guy's name like 6 weeks ago before it was cool to talk about Julien Brisebois. I was talking about this guy as the GM, but he's not a proven commodity. He's been an assistant general manager. He's been a capologist, but he has not been the general manager of a hockey team. That's a serious, serious job. And as Marc Bergevin has shown us, it's not one that everybody can do. So if it is Brisebois, we'll see, but it's not going to be until the off season, right? I mean, you don't hire an assistant general manager from a team in the middle of a season. At least I don't think that's something that happens. So that's the thing. I don't think Marc Bergevin is going anywhere, at least until the off season. And maybe then, thought about this too, the Shea Weber injury. He got injured on opening night. He played hurt for 6 weeks. He's now been out for a couple of weeks, and he'll be out for a couple more. I think I could easily envision a scenario where at the end of season press conference, they're talking about how Shea Weber's injury knocked their season off the rails, which would be a complete fabrication and completely unfair and untrue. They were absolute horse spit when Shea Weber was playing. That. So I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that Bergevin is gone. So talking about who's going to replace him might be a little premature at this point. But yeah, wow, what a game on Thursday night. Tampa was fantastic. Max Pacioretty played his best game of the season. When was the last time you watched a Canadiens game and Max Pacioretty was the best player on the ice? He was the best player out there for Montreal, which hasn't happened. I mean, he's looked lost. He's looked despondent for long stretches of time this year, but He played like nobody was watching the other night and really, really looked good doing it. And the fans got into it. As negative and angry as the fan base has been, they showed us on Thursday night that if they get what they believe to be an honest and respectable effort out of their team, they will support their team. They were loud, they were boisterous, and they supported the Canadiens in what was a terrific game. Mikhail Sergachev comes back to Montreal. He had a few impressive sort of end-to-end rushes and showed a little bit some of the flashes of what he can do. He skates so well. He's got the size. I mean, him and Hedman, good Lord, the twin towers on those first and second pairing for a long time. But defensive shortcomings. I mean, he and we saw it. He put the puck on Pacioretty's stick to lead to that first Montreal goal. But the fact is, and I talked about how frustrating it is, right? Because if Montreal just played the way they did against San Jose, a 4-1 loss on Tuesday every night, then I think people would just accept it and be like, well, yeah, it's a lottery team, you know, like Buffalo or Arizona or whatever, like a bad team. You just come to sort of expect it. But when you get an effort like that against a team like Tampa, it just sort of reminds you that, yeah, I mean, they do have personnel that should be able of delivering the occasional win. And it just doesn't happen that way. It's very strange to see the team that went toe-to-toe with Tampa on Thursday night and think that that's the same team that was so poor and just looked disinterested against San Jose earlier in the week. So anyway, what I'm saying is don't believe the hype.
I do think, though, that, you know, if the Canadians were still losing as much as they were but putting together efforts like they were on, like, the night against Tampa, it would at least be exciting hockey. It's not just that they're losing. It's that it seems like they don't even care and together. So, you know, I wouldn't blame the fans for turning their backs.
No, not at all.
If the Habs are not invested, then why would the fans be invested?
The fans don't owe them a damn thing.
Exactly.
If the fans are buying tickets and they show up to the rink, I'm a firm believer in this. Do whatever you want. If you want to boo, then boo. If you want to yell, then yell. Nobody should tell a paying customer how to behave as long as they do it within obvious reasonable parameters and within the rule of law. Hey, who knows what might happen if you buy tickets to a hockey game, you buy tickets to a World Junior game, the gold medal game. Maybe you'll end up with a silver medal
around
in
your
hand. Right? I mean, just be careful. I don't want to get hit in the head with a silver medal. Keep your head up. What was it? Pedersen tossing away his medal. Is he the captain of the
captain
of the Swedish team, tossing in a Vancouver Canucks prospect. Rangers.
And I know this because my friend has season tickets to the Rangers, and he said he's very excited for him to play
right.
for the Rangers, but his seats are really close to the glass, so he's a little bit worried about getting hit with stuff.
Well, there's no medals. There's no medals in the National Hockey League.
Right.
Right. And I Max Pacioretty had a good quote about this, to go back to Pacioretty earlier today, and he said he loved it. The kid, and to paint you a picture, is he wins a silver medal. I mean, wins may not be the right word, but he's awarded a silver medal after losing to Canada in the gold medal game of the World Juniors yesterday. And he tosses it away, tosses it off into the crowd. And I think a lot of people were saying, oh, it's disrespectful. And hey, that's fine. I mean, everybody's entitled to their opinion. I love stuff like this because it is kind of divisive. But what Pacioretty said, I think, resonates. He said, they don't give you a silver medal when you lose in the Stanley Cup final.
Right.
I don't see how this is any different. I mean, who wants that silver medal? It's a reminder. Is it not sort of, in a way, a reminder of the fact that you
came
failed?
So close.
Hey, you failed. You lost.
Yeah.
You had a chance to win gold and you lost. It's different, I think, in an individual sport even, right? But in a team sport, you played for the gold medal. You did not win. Here is the thing that will now remind you of that
forever,
for the rest of your life. I'm not trying to be disrespectful to silver medalists. I'm just trying to put myself in the head of this kid. And I think that Pacioretty made a good point. No Canadians game tonight. Kind of a weird day in the NHL. We've already got a game in the books. The Flyers beating the Blues earlier today. Only 8 more games, and we've got one of them going on right now as we speak. The Stars are all over the Edmonton Oilers. So we'll keep you posted as the results come in. But what we are throughout the course of the show today, starting with Adam Gretz. Adam's with the NHL and NBC Sports. We're going to talk a little bit about the Penguins. The sixth place Penguins? What's going on here? Are they done? We'll talk to Adam Gretz about the Penguins and more coming up next. Stick around. This is Hockey Primetime on SiriusXM NHL Network Radio, and we're also streaming the show live at hockeyprimetime.com. You can watch the video stream on Facebook Live, on YouTube Live, on Periscope, and probably on other stuff that I'm forgetting. So stick around. We'll be back right after this. Thank you.
go, and Adam is on the line.
Thanks. 3, 2, 1. Hey, welcome back. This is Hockey Prime Time on SiriusXM NHL Network Radio, streaming live at HockeyPrimeTime.com. You can find old episodes, old segments at HockeyPrimeTime.com as well. Take a look at our website. You can hear all kinds of frozen cold takes and some hot ones there as well. My name is Connor McKenna. I am the host of the show. Laura Saba is the producer of the program. We're with you until 7 o'clock tonight, and we'll turn it over to live coverage of the National Hockey League at that point. But right now, let's talk about a team that, are they still trying to figure it out? We're more than halfway through the season. The Pittsburgh Penguins did get a win yesterday, but they are struggling right now. The two-time defending Stanley Cup champions are currently outside of a playoff spot. And, the window's closing, right? But then again, you do have teams in front of them slipping a little bit. Are we ready to count them out just yet? They're sixth in the Metropolitan Division. That does feel weird to say. With more on that, and to go around the National Hockey League, we welcome back to the show from the NHL on NBC Sports, Adam Gretz. Adam, how are you?
I'm doing great, Connor. How are you today?
I'm doing all right. And I am curious about this Penguins team who – I know there was those blowouts and back-to-backs early in the season, but I think a lot of us keep sort of waiting for them to get their act together, and every time it looks like maybe they have done, they haven't, and they take a step backwards. I mean, that was an impressive win over the Islanders yesterday, but here they are. They're still behind Carolina, the Rangers, Columbus, Jersey, and Washington. Is this who this team is? Are they just not good?
It's, you know, you're halfway through the season at this point. You have a pretty big body of work there in front of you. That's the way it's starting to look. And they've had, maybe over the past month and a half, they've had the occasional game where they've come out and they've played like they did last night against the Islanders, where they look like the Penguins again. They look like a team that can play the way they played the past two seasons. And you think, okay, maybe this is the game where the floodgates open. This is game where they turn it around, and then they come out the next game and they just fall flat. I mean, that game they played against Carolina the other night was probably one of the worst games they've played in 2-3 years. They had a game like that right before Christmas against Anaheim where they just wasn't totally outmatched, and that's been happening so many times this season. And you look at the players they lost this offseason. They lost a lot of really key depth guys like Nick Bonino and Matt Cullen, guys that could play up and down your lineup. Chris Kunitz, the guy that you could have him on the fourth line, you could have him on the first line, never seemed out of place, and they didn't really replace those guys. I mean, they lost a big chunk of that team, and the only thing they really did over the offseason was bring in Ryan Reeves and Matt Hunwick, and that just is not enough. They got a little bit of a spark last night from Daniel Sprung. Maybe he can give them some of that life that some of the young guys in recent years have given them. But right now, they're just looking like a team that is really inconsistent. And like I said, it's halfway through the year. You got a big body of work there to show what you are.
And you just checked off a long list of key components on two Stanley Cup teams, or at least one Stanley Cup team in all of those cases. And I don't believe you mentioned the name of Marc-Andre Fleury, who was huge for them last year, right? And not just in the regular season, but in the playoffs as well. And, you know, whether you're a big believer in intangibles or not, a guy who was a veteran of three Stanley Cup championships in that locker room, I mean, how much are they missing him?
Well, I think where they're missing him is, this is kind of one of the storylines that's kind of been overlooked a bit this season, is that Matt Murray struggled a little bit. He has not played at the same level that he played at the past 2 years, and you don't really have, or until recently, they really haven't had that guy that could step in and kind of relieve him a little bit, give him a break, because they opened the year with Antti Niemi, and that experiment just totally failed. And then they kind of just bounced around with some different guys. Now they have Tristan Jarry up here, one of their other young goaltenders, who has played really well. He played so well in his past two starts. I think they should give him another start tomorrow night against Boston. But, yeah, Matt Murray struggled a little bit this year, and they haven't had that other goalie that can step in and pick up that slack a little bit. With Marc-Andre Fleury, you had a really solid top half of the league goaltender that was extremely durable for more than 10 years. That is a really valuable asset, and that's a tough thing to replace.
We're talking to Adam Gretz, the Pittsburgh Penguins. are sixth in the Metropolitan Division as it stands right now. And as Adam just told us, they're facing the Bruins tomorrow night at 7:30 p.m. It's a light schedule in the National Hockey League tonight. The Penguins, one of many teams, 13 teams, that are not playing in today's NHL action. The division I'm curious about, because the Metropolitan Division, I mean, is clearly stacked. And the fact that the Devils have been as good as they have, for example, has thrown sort of another curveball. We knew it was going to be a good division, but it's been even better, I think, than some expected. How much can we also chalk up to, or what part of their struggles can we chalk up to the fact that their division, as any division will do around a Stanley Cup winner, is it's an arms race. I mean, it just seems like the division keeps getting better. How much of a factor is that, do you think?
Well, and that's kind of one of the things I think a lot of people in Pittsburgh are clinging to right now, is that they have a ton of games against their division left. That they can still make up a lot of ground there pretty quickly if they can get wins in those games. But like you said, everybody in the division has just stacked themselves. I think Columbus is a lot better than they played recently. I think that's a team that's going to be a force. The Rangers, as long as Henrik Lundqvist, you can never count them out. And then you have teams like New Jersey and Carolina that are suddenly a lot better. New Jersey looks like they are going to be a playoff team this season. Carolina, if they could just ever figure out that goaltending situation, they just are so frustratingly close every season, and they just keep missing that one component. That game they played against Pittsburgh the other night and the game in Carolina about a week earlier, they looked pretty outstanding, and they did to the Penguins what the Penguins did to a lot of teams the past 2 years, where they were just blowing past them, skating circles around them. That's a really intriguing team right there. And if they could just ever get that goaltending situation figured out, I think they could really do some damage. They have that great young defense. They have a lot of really talented young forwards. Sebastian Aho is just a fantastic player to watch. I think Jeff Skinner is one of the more underappreciated players in the league. But yeah, just everybody in the division is good right now. It's a tough division to make up ground in when you get into that type of hole, because everybody's so good.
It's true, and that's it, right? You talk about all those division games. And look, I mean, the other side of this is, what do they have? They've got 39 games left, the Penguins. They've played so many games. Like, they've not only played so many games, as has been mentioned time and time again in the last couple of years with those Stanley Cup runs that they've gone on. I mean, I know that does take a toll, but they've also played more games than certainly any team in the Eastern Conference, and possibly more. Yeah, St. Louis has played more than them, and I think that's it in the NHL. So they've played a lot of games this year, too. I know that's another thing that gets brought up a lot, but how valid is it? And I know that you recently sort of looked at historical trends when it comes to teams that play a lot of playoff games over a couple of years. How valid of an excuse is it that they've just stacked so many games in the last couple of years?
I think there's some element to that. It's not even so much just like the physical factor. I think it's a mental grind as well. I was talking about this in the press box the other night with somebody. When you've been playing Stanley Cup final games for the past 2 years, you've been playing all these big games, it can sometimes be tough to get yourself back up ready to go for a mid-January game against the Carolina Hurricanes. It's not the same intensity for a lot of those guys. I think there is an element to that. But I still think when you look at teams, and they're not the first team that's played in back-to-back Stanley Cup finals. There's a lot of teams that have done it. They may have been the first to win back-to-back in a long time, but a lot of teams have played in back-to-back finals. They did it back in 07 and 08. The Red Wings have done it a couple times. The Stars did it about a decade ago. The Devils have done it. None of those teams have come back the third year and fallen off the way the Penguins have. I still think a lot of it comes down to the fact that they just lost too many guys that they never replaced. And I think that's kind of getting caught up in the salary cap league, where you can't pay Nick Bonino $5 million a year, no matter how much you want to keep him. Matt Cullen obviously had some personal connections to Minnesota. He wanted to go back there. There's not much you can do about that. It's just a lot. And then you have the expansion draft, where you have really no choice but you have to give away your franchise goalie for the past decade. I think that's the stuff that is hurting them the most right now, more so than the number of games they've played, more so than the schedule. I just think they lost too much talent and they haven't replaced it well enough.
And looking at the Devils, I'm curious as to where you stand on this. Like, I think like most of us, right? I mean, you've been at the very least a little bit surprised by how well things have gone. Appears that the, you know, they're turning into pumpkins a little bit right now. What do you think? Are you thinking they can hang on? There's still 42 games to go for them. I know they're in second place. They've been excellent. But do you think that they are actually good enough to hang on and be a top three or even a top five team in the Metro?
I think they are. I think they've built themselves enough of a cushion that they have some leeway there, that even if they do fall back a little bit, don't maintain that pace they had early on, they should still be all right. The thing that I think is encouraging about that Devils team is they're getting so many contributions from young players. They have a really nice young core of talent now. And Taylor Hall has taken a big step forward from where he was in year one. I know the Devils wanted to see more from him. He's been outstanding for them. And a lot of those young guys are starting to come along. And, you know, that's kind of what they've been lacking for the past, years. They haven't really had a young nucleus of forwards that could take over a game or be game-changing players, and they're starting to get that now. And it's definitely a more exciting team than we've seen in recent years. And I don't know if they're going to maintain the same pace they had early on, but I still think they're going to be a playoff team this year. And I think they're going to be around for a while. That's a really good young core there.
All right. So, yeah, another good-looking up-and-coming team, a lot like Carolina, who you mentioned. It does appear that the future is bright for those teams. And, I mean, it's just a lot of quality in that division. I envy you that you get to watch as many games in that division, because I'm watching a lot of Atlantic division, and it's just not that good. It really isn't. It's crazy how bad it is, to be honest.
And everybody else.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, Adam, thanks for your time, man. I appreciate it.
Hey, my pleasure. Anytime.
That's Adam Gratz, NHL and NBC Sports, based in Pittsburgh, covering the Penguins. You can also read his work with FanRag and also the Sporting News, NHL department as well. What do we have coming up? Geez, I am going to have to get to this at some point. So maybe we'll do it at the end of this hour. But the story about the Taylor Hall trade to the Ottawa Senators that never happened. Are you aware of that? This one popped up just the other day. Man, oh, man. Peter Chiarelli is a lot like Mark Bergevin. Has been saved from himself on more than one occasion. Actually, I can remember an occasion, where Peter Chiarelli saved Mark Bergevin from himself. Anyway, we'll get to that story before the hour is up. But coming up next, let's talk Tampa Bay Lightning, the top team in the NHL, with Eric Erlandson of LightningInsider.com. Eric's next on Hockey Primetime.
welcome back. This is Hockey Prime Time. Happy Saturday to you. I hope you're having a good one so far. My name is Connor McKenna, with you until 7 o'clock tonight. And plenty of games are on the NHL schedule, only 7 more after the one that's in progress right now. And if you haven't seen the highlight already, butt fumble, eat your heart out. We have a butt goal in the National Hockey League in the St. Louis-Philadelphia game. The return, not so triumphant return of Braden Shen, Philadelphia. Anyway, you probably will see the highlight at one point. It's not quite or even close to being as embarrassing as the infamous Mark Sanchez butt fumble in the National Football League all those years ago, of which I will say, as a matter of fact, I'm pretty sure this happened, that I read an oral history of the butt fumble, and it was amazing. It was super funny and super great. That was one of the more fun things I've read in the last 6 weeks or so. Speaking of reading, you can do that if you're a Tampa Bay Lightning fan at my next guest's website. It's lightninginsider.com, and he is currently covering the best team in the National Hockey League through the first half of the season. His name is Eric Erlandson. He's been on the Tampa Bay Lightning beat for a long, long time. Eric, how you doing?
I'm good, Connor. How are you, man?
I'm doing well, and that was a lot of fun the other night at the Bell Center. The Tampa Bay Lightning came to town, and, geez, the Canadians have had such a bad year, Eric. What a study in contrast. I've thought of this, really, with the Lightning being such a well-run organization and really a team on the rise, but a team that's faced the Canadians, right? I mean, they've been duking it out for the division the last couple of years. They've met in the playoffs a couple of times in the last few years, and then, well, I mean, how the mighty have fallen, I guess you could say, while the Lightning have just been on the rise. It's been fun, hasn't it? I would imagine, and an entertaining hockey team to watch this year.
Yeah, this year for sure. You know, they're back to that up-tempo style that they used in 2015 to get to the Stanley Cup final. You know, there's a little, not quite as up-tempo, but they're back to, you know, being aggressive on a forecheck and making sure their D are up in the play. And, you know, that's reflected in the amount of offense that they've gotten from their blue line this year. They didn't get a lot of it last year. I think that's one of the things they really tweaked in their system this year, was to make sure their D were up, make sure they were involved. Obviously, you have to have the trust of your forwards if you're a D-man to make that push, especially along the walls. But they're so active in the rush. I mean, Victor Hedman so often is part of the rush. Now you got Mikhail Sergachev so often a part of that rush. Even Anton Strahlman gets up there. We've seen Dan Girardi get up there. He scored a couple of goals and been around that area a couple of times as well. So to me, that's the big difference between this team this year, is they're more aggressive with their forecheck than maybe last year, and their D are much more aggressive.
Yes, of course, we all know about the offensive dynamo Dan Girardi. You know things are going well when Dan Girardi is pinching in and scoring goals. Definitely not why they signed him. But yeah, it seems like everything is just coming up aces for Steve Yzerman. I look at the moves he made in this offseason. Certainly took a risk trading Jonathan Drouin. I know Mikhail Sergachev, a highly regarded player, but I don't know if anybody could have anticipated the level of success he's had so far this year, except maybe Yzerman and his deputies. But he's been on a run, hasn't he? I'd say, for my money, he's probably the best general manager in the National Hockey League. Well, what's your feel for that?
Yeah, you look at the moves he's made, you know, and the way that he's been able to massage the salary cap. I mean, you know, last year, finding a way to trade Valtteri Filppula and free up $5 million on his contract this year, making the move with Vegas to ensure that the Golden Knights took Jason Garrison and his $4.5 million contract that opened up so much space. You make a move like trading Jonathan Drouin for Mikhail Sergachev, and obviously it's a hockey trade, but it's a contract trade as well. You know, Drouin was a restricted free agent, needed a new deal. Sergachev in, so you've got that contract control on an entry level for 3 seasons. And to be honest with you, I don't even think the Lightning expected this kind of production from Mikhail Sergachev this year. In fact, I know they didn't, because, you know, part of the condition of that trade was that conditional second-round pick if Sergachev didn't play 40 games. Huh. Obviously, that's going to hit. Actually, that hit the other night. So that condition is null and void. But that's why that condition was put in. They weren't sure if he was going to be able to come in and have the impact he has. And he's really settled so many things and slotted so many things right on that blue line.
And I'd be curious to know what you think, because I think we saw everything that Sergachev can do in that game the other night. I know he didn't end up with any points, nor really any scoring chances, but we saw end-to-end rushes. We saw all kinds of offensive flair. We saw him crush Brendan Gallagher with a hit that hurt him
This is a guy who can throw his weight around and doesn't mind doing it. I know that from having watched him as he was coming up after being drafted by the Canadians. But we also saw the other side, and that is not a perfect defensive game. And what 19-year-old does play a perfect defensive game? But really, he had more time than he thought he did. He ends up putting the puck right onto Max Pacioretty's stick. And even Pacioretty, who's struggled mightily this season, isn't going to miss in a situation like that. Is that pretty much it, though? I mean, if we're talking about what he needs to work on, and I guess this is kind of always what it is, whether it's forwards or defensemen, it's the defensive side of the game, if there is a deficiency right now, isn't it?
Especially at that age. You know, he's coming in, and you know, you talk about he didn't understand how much time he really had to make that play that led to Montreal's goal in that game. You know, that's going to come through experience, and that's just going to come through, you know, learning the league and understanding that. And that's the area. If you look at his ice time, like the point totals are obviously there. You see the offensive skills. I mean, he's a magician with the puck at the blue line. I haven't seen a kid at that age, at that position, make the moves that he has, have the confidence to make the moves he has at the blue line that he does. That is the reason he was drafted, you know, so high and such a highly regarded prospect. So, yes, he has to learn the other end. His ice time is 14, 15 minutes a night. The other night against Montreal. But that's where he has to learn. And that you can only do that through experience. And the good thing with what they have and the way that things are broken down this year, he gets to play with Anton Stralman, who is about as steady and reliable as they come in this league in terms of the way that he can play. So he's there. He's a perfect partner for a guy like Sergachev to come in and learn from and be paired with. And, you know, so those things are going to come for Sergachev. He's already got a man's body. That's just at 6'3", about 200 pounds. He already, you know, has that in him. So it's just learning the game and understanding it. And once he does and he starts to play 20 to 22 minutes a night, whew, I can imagine the point totals are going to come with it.
And maybe the hardware as well, although he might be having to duke it out with one of his teammates, Victor Hedman, who yeah. I think a lot of people right now have at the top of their Norris ballots. And it seems like he's been around forever, and I guess he has. But he's only 27 years old, Hedman. What do you think? Is this the year that he steps out of the shadow? You look at the seasons. It seems like the time is right. Erik Karlsson's having a tough time. The Senators are struggling. Brent Burns has been better, but he also had a tough start to the season and hasn't been a Norris caliber guy. Is this the year that Victor Hedman finally wins the Norris Trophy?
I think if things keep going the way they are, I think he's going to have to be considered the favorite for it. I know PK Subban's having a great year in Nashville again. I think it's kind of gone overlooked with the success that Nashville's had, but Subban's having a great year. I know Pietrangelo has kind of tailed off a little bit here for St. Louis. So, yeah, I think because of the things you mentioned with Brent Burns and Erik Karlsson, this might be the year. I mean, you look up. I didn't even realize this until I looked it up the other day. Victor Hedman's, like, tied for third in points among defensemen. Huh. That kind of snuck up on me because, actually, Sergachev had been leading the team from defensive scoring for most of the year, and Victor Hedman's kind of turned it up. So as long as that continues, I think that this is probably going to be the year he kind of gets that breakthrough.
It is. It's amazing that, and you mentioned Sergachev's point totals, that he still does have, not only does he have more points than Jonathan Drouin, which I don't know how many of us expected that, he's got more points than any player on the Montreal Canadiens roster at 19 years old, and he's only playing 14, 15 minutes a game. I mean, it's a good asset management, right? It's putting the kid in a position to succeed, and that's what they're doing. And it just seems like this organization, to go back, and I know that you can read Erica writing about some of these kids at lightninginsider.com. The prospects for this organization, if you're watching the World Junior Championships, every game, it seems like you've got 3, 4, 5 Tampa Bay Lightning prospects. And I know that's not in and of itself a measure of drafting success, but it's got to mean something. How is it that they've done such a good job in the draft, continually finding the kind of kids who play in World Junior Championships?
First of all, you didn't make too many friends in Montreal by pointing out the circuit has more points than anybody on the Canadian roster. But, you know, Al Murray, you know, he was with Hockey Canada for a number of years. He was responsible for a lot of the top Kings players, the Dustin Brown, the Andre Kopitar, Jonathan Quicks. You know, he was with the Kings during that time. He's the guy that I think gets a lot of credit here because he's in charge of the scouting department. They're able to find guys like Andre Palat in the seventh round. They're able to draft Braden Point in the third round. And then, you know, you look at the Worlds. I mean, they had 4 players on Canada's World Junior roster this year. They had 5 players on Canada's World Junior roster last year. They had Libor Hajek, who was a force for the Czech blue line at the World Juniors this year. They just seem to find a way to find this talent. And that's what's going to kind of keep this organization so relevant for years down the road, because like this year, as well as they are, I think Steve Yzerman is going to make a big splash come the trade deadline. And he's got the prospects and he's got the assets to be able to pull it off. So not only can that help now, that's going to help you down the line and keep that kind of pipeline sort of flowing. And you know, with this organization, there's always more prospects coming. You know, Syracuse this year had a 10-game winning streak, and it's just as their first-year players, the Anthony Sorellis, the Matthew Josephs, those type of players that have kind of found their way as first-year pros, and they've really helped push Syracuse towards the top of the AHL in their division.
They've got about $4 million in current cap space. In true cap space right now, it's closer to $2 million, but that number grows as the season goes on. Here's a scenario for you, Eric, and of course, this may sound a little bit crazy, but you talk about making a splash at the trade deadline. A lot of Max Pacioretty trade rumors. He only makes $4.5 million per season. I mean, can you envision a scenario where Steve Yzerman commits robbery and steals Max Pacioretty away from the Canadiens?
Yeah, that possibility is always certainly there. I mean, that's, you know, I know that they've been on the lookout for a top nine forward. I think the area he really liked to address that was on the back end. You know, there are some question marks on their defense. You know, Jake Dotchin hasn't even been in the NHL a full year now, even though he's paired with Victor Hedman. You know, you don't know what you're still going to get out of Sirkachev here as the games kind of tighten up down the second half of the year. So, to me, there's some question marks there. I think they'd like to bring in some experience. I know it's not easy to pull off those type of deals for basically a top 14 man, but I think that's the first priority for this team. But second, it's probably a top nine forward, and certainly Pacioretty is somebody who could fit the bill if the deal is right. Hmm.
And, yeah, help on the blue line. Something else I wanted to ask you about is Julien Brisebois, who's the assistant general manager or an assistant general manager there in Tampa. A lot of folks in Montreal are talking about him these days as Marc Bergevin's days starting to maybe look a little more numbered than they have in the past. And we know that Montreal only hires French-speaking guys to be general managers or coaches. What do you think of Brisebois as a candidate to be a general manager someday anywhere, let alone Montreal?
Yeah, I think he's going to be. You know, he did interview for the Pittsburgh job before Jim Rutherford took it over a couple of years ago. His name pops up every time there's a general manager opening. If you look at the success he's had in building the Lightning's minor league team, you know, since Tampa's had an affiliation under Yzerman's group, they won a Calder Cup with Norfolk, and they've been to two other Calder Cup finals since then. And Julien Brisebois is a big part of that. He brings in guys like Yanni Gord. He brings in guys like Jonathan Marchessault, who are not castaways, but kind of given up on by other organizations, and brings them in. So he can find talent as well and bring them in. And, you know, he was a big supporter of hiring John Cooper for their minor league team back when they joined the affiliation. So obviously he knows the CBA inside and out. He is the go-to guy when it comes to CBA-related issues. You know, and he's got the talent eye. He's got the ability to kind of find that talent, and he'll surround himself, no matter where he gets hired, with others who can do the same thing. So, yeah, I think Julien Brisebois eventually is going to be a general manager in this league.
Well, here's hoping it's here in Montreal and not somewhere else. Eric, a pleasure as always to check in with you, my friend. Thank you for making time for us here today. Check out lightninginsider.com. Happy New Year, Eric. Cheers.
Same to you, Connor. I appreciate it.
That's Eric Erlandson. I'm Connor McKenna. This is Hockey Primetime. We're back in just a few moments. We'll wrap up the first hour of the program. Don't miss an entire guest in the second hour. No guests coming up next, but one thing I do want to talk about. Yes, I know that my story of the year, my worst story of the year in hockey was that the NHL is not going to the Olympics. But let's pretend that they are. What would the Olympic rosters look like if teams were sending NHL players to South Korea for the Olympics? So we'll explore that question next. This is Hockey Primetime here on SiriusXM, NHL Network Radio, and streaming live at hockeyprimetime.com.
welcome back. This is Hockey Primetime on Sirius XM NHL Network Radio, streaming live at hockeyprimetime.com. Thanks for joining us and making us a part of your Saturday evening. Plenty of games coming up in the National Hockey League. A busy night ahead, although not that busy by Saturday night standards. I don't know if they're taking a step back, showing a little respect to the National Football League, who are playing their wild card weekend, the first two games today, two more tomorrow. But you've got two games in the books already. The Stars beat the Oilers 5-1 earlier today as Radulov, Sagan, and Ben, the big three, all scored goals. And how about John Klingberg? Although we were talking Norris candidates in the last segment, his name didn't come up, but he's been outstanding this year for Dallas. A real bounce back season for him and that organization. They're on pace for roughly a 100-point season and a playoff spot this year. The Flyers have beat the Blues earlier today. Sean Couturier had himself a day with two goals. He's got 21 on the season, and what a breakout year he's having for the Flyers. I wanted to talk about the Olympics, so we've got a couple of minutes to do so. Now, I've got bad news for you. If you've just come out of a fallout shelter where you've been living for the last several months and you didn't know, I've got bad news for you. The NHL is not going to the Olympics next month, which certainly makes me a lot less excited about the Olympic tournament. I know a lot of people are talking about it. Oh, the Olympic hockey tournament, you know, oh, who's going to be there? And Brian Gionta and James Wisniewski, like, oh, come on, like, who cares? Anyway, the American roster, what would it look like? What would this U.S. roster, just to give you an idea of what we've been robbed of by Gary Bettman and the NHL owners, those are the people I blame because I know the players wanted to be there. Auston Matthews, Jack Eichel, Joe Ryan Kessler. That's 1, 2, 3, 4. Those are your centers for Team USA. On the left wing, Johnny Gaudreau, okay. James Van Riemsdyk, Max Pacioretty, and Brandon Saad. Patrick Kane on the right wing, Phil Kessel on the right wing, Blake Wheeler on the right wing on the third line, and TJ Oshie. These are just the projected rosters, by the way, from ESPN.com. TJ Oshie is your fourth line right winger. So your fourth line is Saad, Kessler, Oshie. Your third line, Pacioretty, Pavelski, Wheeler. Wow. A nice looking Team USA for the theoretical Olympic hockey tournament. That'll never happen. You'd have Suter and Truba as your first pairing, Werenski and Seth Jones. You're a Columbus Blue Jackets, a second pairing, Cam Fowler and Ryan McDonough as your third pairing, Corey Schneider in goal. That's a nice looking team. Dylan Larkin, JT Miller, Shane Goss to spare, Kevin Shattenkirk as your extras, and a whole bunch of really good players miss out on Team USA. Now we get to Canada, the team that would win this theoretical tournament. And that is line one, Sidney Crosby. We'll start with the centers, actually, like we did before. Crosby, McDavid, Tavares, Taves. Joe Thornton finally misses out. Left wing, Marchand, Hall, Stamkos. Sorry, Stamkos, you're going to have to play on the wing. Jamie Benn is your fourth left winger. On the right wing, Shifley, another center on the wing. McKinnon, another center on the wing. And Sagan, another center on the wing. So your first line is Marchand, Crosby, Bergeron. Okay. Second line, Taylor Hall, Connor McDavid, Mark Scheifele, Hall and McDavid together. Something that we never got a chance to see in Edmonton. Stamkos, Tavares, McKinnon as your third line. Are you kidding me? And your fourth line, this is your shutdown line. Jamie Benn, Jonathan Taves, and Tyler Sagan. On the blue line, Duncan Keith and Shea Weber on your top pair. Mark Edward Vlasic, Drew Doughty as your second pair. And ESPN has Morgan Riley there with Alex Petrangelo as your third pair. Carey Price in goal, and your extras are Logan Couture, Sean Couturier, P.K. Subban, and Brent Burns, your reigning Norris Trophy winner. So just to give you an idea of what we're not going to get to see. We could go into more detail, but you can check out the article at ESPN.com. Sweden's got a real nice-looking team. How about Philip Forsberg, Nicholas Backstrom, and Victor Arvidsson as your number one line? Not too shabby. And it's such a shame. I mean, wouldn't that be something to look forward to? I know no matter where you are, you don't want to hear me complain about the weather. It's very cold in Montreal. We've gotten a lot of snow, but I know the entire Eastern Seaboard has been hammered. I mean, hell, Florida's had a whole bunch of snow. Everybody's got bad weather. I mean, in LA, it's cold right now. It's just cold everywhere.
1 minute.
It would be a nice relief, wouldn't it, from the cold, if we had an Olympic hockey tournament to look forward to in the month of February? The dog days. It's the dog days of winter, right? August, dog days of summer, dog days of winter. It's February, man. The worst month. The shortest, but somehow worst month on the calendar. So, yeah, get the full list
at ESPN.com under the NHL tab. It's been great to see what Greg Wyshynski, Emily Kaplan, and others have done with the ESPN NHL department. Coming up next, it's the second hour of the show. We'll start off by talking about the very disappointing Chicago Blackhawks. So Tracy Myers is going to be joining us from NHL.com, based in Chicago. Vegas went through, beat the Hawks at the United Center last night, and Jeff Glass may be coming back to Earth. So let's talk Hawks and go around the National Hockey League in just a few moments when hour number two of Hockey Primetime gets going here on SiriusXM NHL Network Radio, streaming live at HockeyPrimetime.com, Periscope, Facebook Live, and YouTube Live. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back. It's hour number two. This is Hockey Prime Time here on SiriusXM NHL Network Radio, streaming live at HockeyPrimetime.com. You can find our stream, our video stream on Facebook Live. You get to see what it looks like when I talk
Laura Sava is the producer of the show. She's here as well, enjoying a delicious sugar-free mango and lime gum. And let's say that looks like a C and not a G, but it is gum. My name is Connor McKenna. Nice to be with you until 7 o'clock tonight. And you can also stream old episodes at hockeyprimetime.com. You can find old segments there as well. You might be able to find a few featuring our next guest, although I think the team we were talking about was probably doing a lot better the last time we spoke. Her name is Tracy Myers, based in Chicago, covering the National Hockey League at large and centered there in the Windy City. Tracy Myers, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
I am very good. How are you guys doing tonight?
We're doing great. Thanks for making time for us here. I do appreciate it. And, geez, I mean, that was a crazy game yesterday. Following on your Twitter feed, as you get up to go to the elevator, the Vegas Golden Knights tie the game. Yeah. And what was it? By the time you made it downstairs, they were ahead. It's entertaining, but not good news for the Hawks losing again in regulation.
No, and yeah, the elevator thing, that started a couple of years ago, and it just became a thing where whenever I went in the elevator, something happened. Somebody scored. For a while, it was the Blackhawks, and yeah, but of course, fans always think it was the other team. No, just, you know, especially when Anaheim had 3 goals in 37 seconds during a playoff game a couple of years ago. I think 2 of them happened when I was on the elevator.
Wow.
But as far as the Blackhawks, yeah, you know, they came off that trip, you know, that long road trip, and they at least felt good about the way it ended because they played, I thought, one of their best games in New York against the Rangers. You know, they finally played really well against in front of Jeff Glass. From the start, they were just that Blackhawks team that I've watched the last bunch of years up here, 7, 8 years now. So you thought, okay, you come home and see what happens, because they've been very good at home the last week or so before they left town. But, well, I'll tell you what, Vegas, I mean, I've seen them plenty on TV, but seeing them in person, incredible team. You know, the speed is just unbelievable, and it was evident from the start, despite the fact that they played the night before in St. Louis. You know, Gerard Gallant said, I think we still got something left in the tank, and he wasn't kidding. But yeah, the Blackhawks, just when you think, okay, they're going to finally gain some traction and get on the right course here, they take another step back.
It's funny, I'm looking at my notes here, and that's what I wrote, can't turn a corner. The Hawks, it seems like every time something good happens, they're unable to sort of to build on that. And I mean, it's not like it's over, but that's a really, really competitive division they're in. You know, I'm looking at your tweet from practice this morning, and the lines, I'm going to read you the top 6 forwards. Saad, okay, good start. Taves, all right, okay.
Yep.
Hinostroza, Hartman, Schmaltz, and Kane. I mean, you've got some star power there for sure, but given that those are the top 6 forwards right now, should we really be that surprised that they're struggling a little bit?
I kind of go back and forth on this, because when we all thought, Saad got back here, that was going to be what Taves needed to kind of get going. And Saad, outside of the first couple weeks, you know, has not been who we all thought he was going to be. He hasn't been the guy that he was first go around in Chicago, and even a year or two in Columbus. So, you know, that whole thing, you know, you've seen Taves the last couple of games, he's looked more like himself. And Saad, it's been hit and miss. I will say this in Mr. Vinny Hinostroza's defense, because, yeah, he's a young kid and got called up from Rockford not too long ago, but he's been a little spark on that line. You know, his speed and his ability to get to the puck and everything has led to some very good things the last couple of games, and he's kind of earned that for the time being. But I understand what you're saying, is that you've got some youth, you've got guys, you know, in Taves and Saad, and you know, Kane's actually been pretty consistent this year, so I can't say much there. But you're missing Anisimov on that second line, and that's usually been something Ryan Hartman isn't having the year that he had last year when he had almost 20 goals. So it's definitely different, especially when you've looked at what the Blackhawks have had when everything was rolling for a couple of years there.
And, you know, you mentioned Kane, and I guess that was sort of the gamble that the Hawks took when they made that trade. It was that, all right, Jonathan Taves hasn't been the same since Brandon Saad got traded, and we think that Patrick Kane will produce no matter who he plays with, which I guess, I mean, has that been proven to be correct? Like, how is the trade, a significant trade, looking to you at this point?
I mean, right now, you know, like I said, considering what Saad has done, you know, when you look at, I think he's got 6 game winning goals this year, and that looks great on paper to a degree. But then you remember that I think 5 or 6 of those happened in the first 2 weeks of the season. So, you know, there's no doubt that Kane misses Panarin, and that's nothing against any of his other teammates. They just had that tremendous chemistry, and then you saw what it could lead to over the last 2 years. So as far as Kane being able to play with anybody, it's still pretty close. You know, you see him and Schmaltz, they can have that magic together. Him and Anisimov, I think, work very well together because Anisimov just knows what he needs to do. You get to the front of the net where you either get rebounds or you get the puck back to Kane and let him try again. But at the same time, there's no doubt that, you know, to try and supplement your top line, which it really hasn't worked out as consistently as you'd like, you got rid of a very key piece of a second line, which was rolling for 2 straight years.
No kidding. And Panarin is, I guess, a little bit off the pace that he was on. He was a 77 and 74 point guy in the last 2 years in Chicago. And this year he's on pace for probably something a little bit closer to like 65 points, but still a highly productive season. He's on pace for 20 goals, but I guess that's what's going to happen. I mean, you're used to and have chemistry with one of the most dynamic players in the National Hockey League in Patrick Kane. There's nobody in Columbus, God bless them. They got a nice roster, but there's nobody like that there.
Yeah.
But he's still productive. It's an interesting one. And I guess at the same time, you know, you look at these contracts that Kane and Taves have, and I think the layman, and I'll be the layman in this case, I'll say, you know, I think we've sort of learned that you cannot spend $21 million on 2 players in a cap league and hope to win, even if it is those 2 guys. Is that oversimplifying, or do you think there's something to it?
I am all for simplification whenever it comes to numbers in the cap, so I'm perfectly fine with that. I absolutely understand what you're saying, and you go back to, it's always hindsight, isn't it? You go back to when those contracts were signed, and you look at it, and you saw what they had done up to that point, and you think, oh, great deals, because you knew they were going to get more elsewhere, even though there was no way in hell they were ever going to go anywhere else, you know, that they back on money that they could have gotten and all that. But I guess, you also had to look at how it was going to affect your team, and it was absolutely going to affect your team. Then you throw in the Seabrook contract a year or two later, and now that's another 6.5, I can't remember his cap hit, it's up there, but you've got that for another 6 or 7 years. You've got the Anisimov cap hit, which when he's playing, he's very, very good, but he's been hurt quite a bit. You know, this is the second straight year where he's been out with a pretty decent injury. You know, so there's a couple contracts that you can look at. And as far as Taves and Kane, I understand what you're saying. You know, that's a hell of a lot of money to give just 2 guys on a team, regardless of what they've done for you. And it's easy to say that right now, but, you know, it is the cap, and the Blackhawks have always had, you know, fun with it. I've learned more about the cap with this team than any other team I possibly could have covered. But it's just one of those things that they're always going to have cap issues, and stuff like this is part of it.
Yeah, and you mentioned the Seabrook contract. It's shade under $7 million, and, I mean, it's going. I mean, he's signed through his age 39 season at a pretty big number. Now, correct me if I'm wrong here, but did something happen like they expected the cap to go up and it didn't on the heels of that of those twin contracts for Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews? Did something like that happen?
It might have been, although, you know, Bowman has always preached to us every year that, you know, they try not to expect too much, to try not to you know, over, I know what I'm trying to say here. They always try and guess maybe on the low side, I guess is what I'm saying. Whether that happened at that point or not, I don't know. I'm trying to remember who else they had around that time that they had contracts or everything, but I don't know if that, you know, how much that truly factored in terms of, if they thought that there was going to be more room. But, you know, again, Taves and Kane were going to command quite a bit, and they actually took less than they probably could have. So, you know, was it an overcalculation? I don't know. But it's you know, once again, here we are with a lot of cap issues.
Yeah, and look, at the same time, it's you know, the fact that there's two of them, it's one thing to have one guy at 10.5. It's another to have two. It's amazing. I don't know why it's sort of shocking to me that I look and I see that Duncan Keith is 34 years old, but Duncan Keith is 34 years old. Like, that makes me feel old. I remember when he was coming up. And I guess it's sort of inevitable, right? I know that a lot's been made of sort of dry runs for him and not scoring, which isn't what he's necessarily there to do. But is the fact that he's not as productive as he once was, in your eyes, I mean, is that simply a byproduct of age?
I don't know if it's maybe, I think it's a combination. It might not just be, with a lot of these guys, I don't think it's just age. Look at the miles that they have on them. Mm. Look at the amount of hockey that they've played. You know, you look at Duncan Keith specifically, and then the minutes that he still logs per game, and all those years where he was playing a ton of minutes,